This podcast is brought to you by MITEX, the Massachusetts Innovation and Technology Exchange, the region's premier association for thought leadership, technology trends, building business relationships, and professional training and development. For more information, go to www.mitx.org.
Hey, get your fresh bizcast here. I'm DC Dennison. This week, by popular demand, a business etiquette special with Peter Post, grandson of Emily Post, and columnist for the Sunday Boston Globe. In this conversation with Globe editor Doreen Vigue, Peter tells us how to deal with gum-snapping colleagues and prairie-dogging phone screamers. So let's all mind our manners and listen to Doreen and Peter.
I'm Doreen Vigue, and I'm speaking today with Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Peter is the grandson of Emily Post, who everyone knows is the doyen of good manners. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, we wanted to ask you about some topics that touch all of us in the workplace in terms of what to do, what kind of manners we should have when we're at work. Everyone's on deadline. Everyone's stressed. Work is not necessarily thought of as the place where you have to be on your toes, although it really should be. I think people get very used to each other at work, so they maybe let some of their manners slip. Today I wanted to ask Peter a few questions about what people should do when they're searching for a job and how they should behave during the interview process. What are some of your best tips for folks, especially in the interview process? Because I think that's a very uncomfortable situation, no matter what, for people on both sides of that table, right, Peter?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most difficult things about the interview process is there's been so very much written about it that a person in the process could start reading books and almost become paralyzed by the amount of advice that's out there. And so what I've done is come up with five simple points. And I think if you follow these five points, everything else probably would fall into place, but I think it'd be easy to focus on five things, whereas a whole book's worth of advice might be a little bit much. So here you go.
Okay.
Number one, don't be late. Absolutely be on time, 5 minutes early for your interview. If you have to get there 10 or 15 minutes early, perfect. Go have a cup of coffee at a coffee shop, but walk in 5 minutes early. That's the way to arrive on time. That's the way to show respect for the people you're going to and start out on the right foot, not on the wrong foot. Number two, be prepared for the interview. And that means be prepared in terms of knowing something about the company you're going to, develop some questions that you can ask. So when they ask that question, sir, do you have any questions? You can say, well, you know, as a matter of fact, I do. And you look like you're sharp and you're on the ball and you've got something to offer. Also prepare for the questions that they're going to ask you. Like, you know, what's your favorite, whatever it is, color or something, some offbeat questions sometimes that they want to know answers to get a sense of who you are. Practice those questions. Practice them out loud. Shut your bedroom door and practice them out loud so people are used to hearing your questions, your answers. You used to hearing them in your own mind. Makes a huge difference, okay? Third thing, dress one notch up. That means if those people wear a jacket and an open-collared shirt, you might put a jacket and a tie on if you're a guy, in order to just look a little bit sharp, a little bit ready to be a part of that world. Don't dress way out of character to it, but just what I call one notch up. Number four, smile, look the people in the eye, and speak clearly. Gosh, it's just awful when somebody mumbles in an interview or doesn't present themselves well, because that's how the person who's interviewing you is going to think they're going to represent the company. It's not going to do you any good.
Good point. So even if you're nervous, you're going to have to figure out how to suppress that.
That's right.
In order to speak clearly and make a good
impression. A lot of suppressing it is being prepared and being ready and being totally in control rather than wondering what's going to hit you. Final thing, thank them twice, once at the end of the meeting, and then send a note to, yes, each person who was in the interview group. So if five people interviewed you, send five notes. It's worth it. You may get the job.
Now, should these be handwritten notes, Peter, or can they be email? What's the criteria?
I would do them as envelope stamped addressed to a person. I would word process them preferably. If you can't do that, if you can handwrite the notes, handwrite the notes. But don't compete with the 50,000 emails that somebody's getting. Be special and have your note appear on their desk where they're going to see you, they're going to remember you, they're going to appreciate you.
Excellent. Great advice. One other question. When is it appropriate, if it ever is, I guess it would have to be at some point along the line in the interview process, to ask about money? No one ever wants to talk about money, but everyone going into that meeting has the salary on the brain, I would think.
Absolutely. The time is not at the time that you do the initial interview. The time to do that is when they call you back and they are going to offer you the job, they're going to make that kind of an offer. The best thing for you to do is to, at that point, get a salary, understand how much it's going to be for, benefits, those kinds of things, and then don't say, I'll take the job immediately, but let them know that you'll think about it and call them back within 24 hours or 48 hours. But take some time to think that over and make sure that those numbers are the numbers you're comfortable with. If not, this is the time for you to negotiate, not when you're interviewing for the job.
Okay. Excellent advice from Peter Post. We are speaking with Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Peter writes a behavior column that you write for us? Is that how you prefer to...
it's a business etiquette column.
Business etiquette.
And for me, business etiquette really is about building relationships. So it's really about creating and building the best relationships in your business world.
Okay, so Peter writes a business etiquette column for the Boston Globe for the Sunday business section called Business and Money Section. You'll see it every Sunday in the Globe. Peter is here to discuss some things that we all wonder about and that could probably all make us a little better in the workplace. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Peter, were the electronic devices that we all lug into work every day and that can be, great for us in terms of keeping connected with our clients, et cetera, that can be a real distraction to those around us. What's your advice on email, cell phones, BlackBerries, and other devices?
Well, in a very simple phrase, be a master of the thing. Don't be a slave to it. Learn to turn it off if it's going to bother anybody around you. That's the simplest way to put it. If you're working in a cubicle farm, you bring your cell phone in, turn the thing off, put it on silent or vibrate mode. But having it ring and listen to the rin-tin-tin or something like that go off while the person next to you is trying to get their work done, that's just not fair to them. It's going to be a distraction.
And what about iPods? I've noticed a proliferation of those even here. I mean, this is a place where people are writing and have to sort of block out all the extraneous noise in order to be thinking. Is it impolite to sit at your desk with an iPod on or something that's going to block you out from the rest of your colleagues?
Not at all, especially in a cubicle farm. I think it's a perfectly appropriate thing to do. You're trying to concentrate on your work. I think that the problem would be is if you had a little speaker set up and instead of listening to it through earphones, you were listening to the speakers on your desk. Now that would be inappropriate.
That would be distracting as well.
but the main thing I think that you have to think about in this case is, does your company have a policy that says none of these devices are not? If they have one, don't try to sneak it in. Don't try to beat the policy. Accept the policy for what it is. Maybe if a whole group of you feel that it's unfair, it's a thing that you could talk to with management in a meeting. But don't go trying to just buck the system and cheat it, because you'll get caught and it'll cause a lot more trouble than it's worth.
Okay, great. Let's talk about some behaviors and some manners that everyone should practice within their cubicle, because cubicle life is a fact of life in most of corporate America. And they may have it written in our handbooks, how we're supposed to behave in our cubicles, but I tend to think not. So what's your professional advice, Peter Post, on how we should, besides keeping our shoes on? We know that.
Besides the shoes.
What else do we need to know?
So many of the things that happen in cubicles that frustrate people have to do with the idea that a person suddenly is trying to get their work done and they're being bothered by another person. So, example, that loud voice on a telephone. When you're talking on telephone, your voice goes up into what we call phone voice, and all of a sudden, instead of being able to have a quiet conversation with one other person in your cubicle that doesn't bother the people near you, your phone voice can be heard throughout the whole area. We need to learn to tone our voice down. Your phone works really, really well. It can accept the phone voice at your normal level. So accept that and try to learn to talk with a quieter voice. I've heard of people who have actually been on the phone with a client, and the client's complained that they could hear a colleague in the cubicle farm in the background.
Yeah.
It was disturbing the client.
Yeah, that happens to us a lot. In fact,
learning to have your voice.
People here get so excited that they stand up.
Yeah.
So not only is the phone voice loud, but now they're really projecting it because they're so excited about what
they're standing up. Of course, you're getting to my second point, which is when people stand up and they do what we call prairie dogging. Their head pops up over the wall and they look at the guy next to them and they start talking to him. Right.
Right.
It's
kind
of like butting in and interfering. The other person may be trying to get their work done, and all of a sudden this guy prairie dogs and is in their face. Don't do prairie dogging. Respect the concept that even if there isn't a physical wall there, there's sort of a pseudo wall there that is going to, you know, that you should respect. If you want to talk to that person, get up, get out of your chair, go around and go into their cubicle and say, do you have a minute? Could I talk to you? But recognize they may be busy right then, and it may be better for you to come back another time. One of the things we've recommended to cubicle farm people to have, and to have as a policy in one, is to have some sort of a little flag or a sign or something that you could put up at the entrance that says, you know, if I'm busy and that thing's up, don't come in and bother me. And that way people could be protected from, you know, those casual stop-bys all the time.
But the boss is always welcome.
Boss is always welcome, okay. Of course, and a client or a prospect, of course, would be welcome.
Anyone bringing money or business into the business is always welcome.
Another thing to worry about in cubicles, I think, is people eating in their cubicles, particularly something that's smelly, you know, that liverwurst and onion sandwich type of a thing.
Yeah, someone had some bad fish today.
Whole place. and a corollary to the whole, you know, to the whole food that smells thing is people who chew gum. For some reason, this gum chewing thing really gets, and I understand people are trying to quit smoking, and so they chew gum to help get over that. That's great. But learn to chew it without having to smack it and make all kinds of noises with it and blow and pop bubbles and the rest of it, because those kinds of sounds are going to be what are going to be bothering people.
Yeah.
Not the fact that you chew it with your mouth closed and doesn't make any noise. That would be fine.
I have a confession to make. A colleague pulled me aside and said to me, I can't stand the snapping. Could you please stop?
Right.
I was really embarrassed that I had been disturbing him.
Yeah.
And I apologized, and gum has not passed these lips since then.
And look at how he did it. He pulled you aside.
Right.
He didn't do it and embarrass you in front of everybody.
Right.
He pulled you aside and talked to you privately, and you respected him for that.
I did. And my dentist is happier that he did it as well.
Yeah, so that works. So those are definitely some of the things in the cubicle world to think about. Now, and primarily it's that it's a shared space. And so respect the fact that your actions are going to affect other people around you, and ask yourself, is that really something I ought to be doing now? Because if it's going to bother other people, maybe I shouldn't try to do that right now.
Well, we have somebody who actually brings his laundry to his desk. How do you tell someone to get the stinky shirt to the cleaners already?
Oh, you mean the dirty laundry? Dirty laundry,
yeah.
And then takes it like in the afternoon?
Yes, he rolls it up in a big ball of you know, Jay Pulitzer shirts. Sticks it on the corner of his desk.
Yeah, just exactly the way your friend talked to you about your gum chewing. You know,
yeah.
You say, John, listen, I got to tell you something. I know that you got your laundry to do, but it's really noticeable. could we do something about that? You know,
there's a green cloud above the desk.
Bring it in a plastic bag, in a sealed plastic bag, or maybe you could drop it off at the cleaners on the way rather than on the way home.
If things get a little weird between you and a colleague, say that situation became something that got ugly because the person was really offended.
Yep.
What is your advice to go to the human resources department? How do you resolve something like
that? There's a couple of things that I think you got to think about. The first thing is that you're working with people who you wouldn't necessarily choose as your friends. These are people that you've got to work with, work colleagues, and you can work with them 40 hours a week. I think to a certain extent you got to decide to pick your battles. Maybe even be a little more tolerant of a person at work than you might be in other situations. Ask yourself, is this particular issue that I'm bothered by really something that I ought to make a stink about, that I ought to try to remedy and talk with a person about? Because some of the things, frankly, I think are things that are better left just simply grin and bear it, put up with it. But if it's something that's just really driving you nuts and talking to the individual hasn't worked, absolutely, one of the places to stand up is in the human resources area. If you don't have a human resources area, another place to go is to talk to a manager and ask him if there's anything that can be done. In some cases, it's going to be a fact that nothing can be done. It may end up even being something that you request a new position, change your desk relative to that person's desk.
Okay. We're speaking with Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Peter writes a work behaviors column at the Boston Globe in our Sunday Business and Money section. And Peter's here to talk about some things that we should all do better in the workplace. The next category I'm sort of going to lump together, Peter.
Okay.
Kitchens and communications. Let's talk about the shared kitchen at the workplace. Who should clean it up? Whose responsibility is it? You know, these matters are actually fairly important, especially if you rely on that kitchen to provide your lunch and breakfast and sometimes dinner if we're working late.
Yeah.
How do we divide the chores up, and should we?
Well, first of all, you know, don't assume that any of your coworkers is your mother and is going to clean up for you. You've got to clean up your own messes. And you got to leave everything as if though you were never there. Think of it that way.
Right.
And that means, you know, that your dishes aren't just dumped in the sink or even just left in the rack to dry. You clean them, you dry them off, you put them away where they belong. Same thing with any of the equipment that you use, whether it's a microwave or it's the refrigerator. You know, you clean out the microwave after you finish. You know, very often you put something in the microwave and it's cooking away and it goes pop and it splatters around on the inside of the microwave. You've got a job to clean that thing up. You don't leave food there. We got one letter from a person who was leaving their food in the microwave all day long. People who come to use it, they'd open it up and there was this guy's food sitting in the microwave, you know.
Can you move it in that case?
Yes.
You can touch someone else's food.
You would be able to move it from it in that case,
right.
And you'd put a note on it, and you say, John, I need to use the microwave, so I moved your food. Wonder if you could please not use this as a storage area, you know, that, or go talk to John about
right.
it, if you can find him. Those kinds of things. Same thing with a refrigerator, not quite the same thing, same concept. You know, we all have seen that gross thing that's been in there for 4 weeks and is growing, and it's becoming taking on a life of its own. It's really important to take your used old food containers, things that still have something in it that have gone bad, out of the refrigerator. Don't expect somebody else to do it. The reality is that if you leave it in there and several other people are doing the same thing, management may just close the kitchen down. Say,
right.
Sorry, listen, this is really gross. We're just not going to have a kitchen if you guys can't use it properly.
Right.
And so I think in all of these instances, it's really important to take care of this stuff and be responsible for your part of it. If you're responsible for your part, and by the way, if there's no vantage, there's no benefit in being a food thief either and taking somebody else's meal or taking a meal and leaving a buck in place for it or whatever it might be. Whatever is somebody else's. You know, respect their food as if though there was lock and key on it.
Does it shock you sometimes that you even have to remind people of these things?
It does. But at the same time, I think we're all so busy. You said it so well at the beginning. We're all so busy. We're all so focused on getting our work done that sometimes, you know, we just don't think. And we just do something without really thinking. And later on, you know, if we really thought about it, we go, I can't believe I did that.
Right, right.
Well, you know, what I'm really asking people to do more than anything else is before they do something, think about it for a minute and ask yourself, is that really going to be something that's going to make everybody really happy and make them feel confident and comfortable with me? Or are they going to be really mad?
Right. Okay, on to the communications part
sure.
of the dual question. Emailing. Now, if we're all in a cubicle world and we're all very busy, and it's very convenient to communicate via email, when is it just bad form to communicate via email? When do you need to really get out of your cube and go have face-to-face with people?
Yeah, the most important time that it's really bad form is anything that's personal. I just so strongly recommend that if you can't post the bullet on that email that you're planning on sending on a bulletin board for everybody to read, then don't send it. Talk to the person in person. You know, write them a note, put it in a sealed envelope, and give it to them. Whatever it takes, okay? But emails are public documents. And the problem is that email that you sent that you thought was totally private can get around the office, it can get around the workplace, it can get around the world if you're not careful.
Right.
Okay? And so people, I think, probably more than anything else, make a huge mistake in assuming that their emails are really private and it's okay. It's not. If it's a personal item, it's a personal thing you need to talk to a person about, if it's confidential you need to talk to them about, get up and go talk to them. Take it to them, whatever it is, but don't send it as an email.
Okay. Read Peter Post in the Boston Sunday Globe Business and Money section. He writes a business etiquette column. Peter Post of the Emily Post Institute. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Take care.
It.
Bye, Peter.
Bye.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, and check in next Wednesday for a brand new BizCast. Or better yet, subscribe and have BizCast automatically delivered to your computer and MP3 player.